connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. I think we've got an interesting show in store for you this evening. It'll be jam-packed with information as usual, and it'll be centered around the topic of yoga. It'll be kind of be yoga night on ET Yoga. And yoga, in this context, we're talking about union of you and your higher self with the concept of self-realization. But before we get into all of that information, I'd like to kick off the show in the usual manner by having a little bit of japa yoga in the form of the Hari Om mantra chanting, which is led by Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth will play that short clip now, that'd be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari, Hari, Hari.
Shanti.
Yes, that was Sri Swami Satchidananda, and he was the founder of the Integral Yoga Institute, and that's also a personal teacher of mine, and he passed on in 2002, but he certainly has his center still around the world, and actually a self-sufficient community in Virginia. So always nice for me to hear his voice, and I have heard from several of our audience members actually appreciate hearing a little Japa yoga every week, because some people are just so busy that they really don't have time, it seems, to take some formal meditation time for themselves. And at least if you're a listener of ET Yoga, you'll get the Hari Om chanting at the beginning. And that chanting, by the way, can be used internally as well. So if you do have time either driving to work and you want to do Hari Om mantra internally, there you go, especially if you're stuck in traffic for an hour or so. And also at the end of the program, I'll be sharing with you the Vichara, or the Who Am I technique. And it's another very powerful tool. The topic of tonight's program, basically, union of you and your higher self. And that is really what the word yoga means. And I know in the West, there has been sort of a impression that yoga is just all about the asanas or postures and the pranayams or breathing exercises. And so when typically people say, I'm going to a yoga class, the assumption is that it's the physical or hatha yoga. And for example, in Swami Satchidananda's Integral Yoga, hatha yoga is one of the six branches. And the word yoga, it basically is union of you and your higher self. That's the whole purpose of yoga. And the hatha yoga is a very vital part that is related to helping the person keep healthy and keep the spine flexible, as well as oxygenating the system, the bloodstream with oxygen, super oxygenating, so to speak. So I like to make that distinction on ET Yoga, because when I came up with the title of ET Yoga, and I first presented it, there were a lot of people who wondered, well, how can you do yoga on the radio? And what's the connection with ETs and yoga? And if you view yoga in respect to union of you and your higher self, then you can see how we can do yoga on the radio. And the connection with the ETs is clearly that what I call valid extraterrestrial information that's been channeled to the planet, much of it has to do with the concepts that enhance the yogic teachings, and largely in the areas of everyday practical situations and self-empowering information. And to me, self-empowering information all helps us to become more of who we really are. And in that sense, it is, in that definition, a kind of yoga. And so to me, there's quite a nice marriage between the extraterrestrial information and yoga. And over the course of my personal training in yoga with Sri Swami Satchidananda and Paramahansa Yogananda and Sri Ramana Maharshi, I really can't recall them ever talking about extraterrestrials or their connection with extraterrestrials with respect to their heritage or which star family they were mostly connected to. a lot of the information, let's say, that started in 1987 or so from the Pleiadians, all centered around that thought creates. And I know a lot of Bashar information, and he was from the Esasani at that time, called the Esasani, and apparently they have moved up a dimension now, so they're called the Shekani. But a lot of his information certainly centers around the concepts of beliefs as well. And that's where the information comes from Bashar, that talks about that your thoughts, your beliefs, your emotions, your intentions create the outer reality that you experience. And I know there have been some others, even prior to Bashar, that mentioned this as well. For example, in the Seth material by Jane Roberts. And that's one of the first places that I found this kind of information. And apparently also in the Ra material, or the Law of One. And I'm not so familiar with that material. I think I've, read some of that years and years ago. However, to me, this was kind of like the foundation of this kind of thinking. And that came, around, I don't know, somewhere around 1970. So it's been around now for, 45 years or so. So there's an example of like multiple sources that are into the idea of that thought creates. And also now we're seeing scientific support of those concepts from people like Greg Braden. The scientific support is that we used to think that your thoughts and beliefs, intentions had absolutely no effect on your outer world. And according to Greg, this is one of two scientific hypotheses that we've held for the last 300 years that have now been proven incorrect. And the other area, as I recall, gives an example of taking a particle and splitting that particle and sending the two parts of the particle in opposite directions. And what they've now shown is that when you affect one of those particles, it instantaneously affects the other one, thus showing the connection of particles. And if you take that concept a little bit farther, where they go, I guess, let's say if you want to take it back to the point where they think there was called the, the Big Bang Theory, where there was everything was condensed, then all the particles were actually together at one point in time. So there's a connection between all particles in the universe. And that's also very close to the extraterrestrial concept as proposed by Bashar, which is called prime radium. And prime radium is basically the theory that everything that exists is actually one particle that travels at infinite speed, has no mass, and therefore breaks no laws of physics. And I like to kind of cross-reference information, especially when I hear it from multiple sources, and I consider those sources to be relatively valid. And in my own experience, when I was talking about coming up with the idea of the marriage between ET and yoga, I really, really appreciate a lot of the extraterrestrial information because it centers around this concept of creating your own reality. And it's a concept that I never heard in the yoga teachings. So that's why I like to share that with my listening audience. And if you're a longtime listener of ET Yoga, you'll know that I draw information primarily from Esasani, Arcturian, Andromedan, Pleiadian, Sirian. Those are the main groups that I try to cross-reference information from. And I find a consistency there. I find a similar consistency when I look at the yogic teachings of Satchidananda and Ramana Maharshi and Sri Swami Satchidananda. Like, there are different emphases on certain aspects of yogic life that each yoga master tends to pass on. Just like in sports, there are different coaches who have a different emphasis on different things that they teach, and they kind of develop a style, let's say. And that's, to me, the main difference between some of these great yoga masters. And, of course, in the long run, they're all teaching people how to become self-realized. And that state of self-realization, which people would most like to talk about, there really aren't any words for it. It's just something that has to be experienced. And one of the reasons why at the end of the program that I like to share that "Who Am I" technique is because that was a doorway that I went through, and when I first realized my higher self and who I was. So it's something that Sri Ramana Maharshi, who passed down the technique, as far as I know, when he had that experience, he stayed in that enlightened level of consciousness, where most people, when they have that glimpse of who they are, in my case, I kind of was there for a few days, but the bottom line is that usually then we're back then relatively close to our normal consciousness and working on the process of staying there permanently. Well, in the old days, they used to call it self-search, or you could call it a spiritual journey. But for most people, there's a common thread here as well that, as Baba Ram Dass would say, it's called the planting of the seed. And when you become aware of the possibility of attaining a higher level of consciousness, and you also know that you have the ability to attain that, that's what's called the planting of the seed. And once that seed's planted, there's no turning back. I mean, what are you going to do? Make believe you don't know? I mean, it's kind of hard to do once you've had that sort of initial realization. And even though there are people that throw around the term guru to mean anything from a, you know, master chef or a, to me, there's two types of gurus. There's the guru who points the way, that's called an upa guru, and a sat guru, that's a being who is the way, because they're maintaining that level of self-realization in their consciousness. And there's not that many, to my mind, in the public view. I'd be hard pressed to name five, but obviously on the planet there are a lot more self-realized beings than in the public view. And the other thing that I've noticed along the way is this whole concept of self-empowering information is closely related to healing. And that's why when people look at my sort of profile at the BBS radio site, some have asked, well, you know, what's your show about healing? Well, in a sense it is, if you've listened for a long time, that I do tend to give a lot of information with respect to optimum health. And The reason for that is, in my opinion, the more information that you understand with respect to being self-empowered, and the more you know about how the universe operates, the more you know about healing. The two just cross into each other. So in my way of thinking, self-empowered thinking and healing, it's the same topic. And if you go to my website at www.etyoga.com, you'll find there a free download. It's the first thing you'll see in the product section. And it's basically that there are 9 concepts that are related to the concept of perfect health. And the root cause of disease is what it's called. And if you understand those 9 concepts, then you understand disease. And if you understand disease, you understand that it has an emotional basis. And thus, then you see the cross, start to see the crossover, because it relates to belief, and it relates to creating your own reality. And certainly your health is a reflection of your mental state. So, to me, it's all combined, and thus maybe one day I'll redo some of the information at the BBS site with respect to what the show's all about. Because to me, ET Yoga is all about self-realization. That's the main button, and I do though touch upon lots of other topics that I feel, if they're related in some way to extraterrestrial information, our extraterrestrial heritage, the human civilization coming originally from the Lyra star group, and certainly anything that has to do with DNA and strands of DNA and our chakra system and activating the chakras and DNA. And, of course, I like to share lots of different techniques and concepts from as many places as possible. And hopefully many of those techniques and concepts and ideas are useful to our listening audience on their spiritual journey. I think as well that it's really, really important that we do place an emphasis on trying to keep the body healthy. It is our it's our tool here on the planet, and there are so many external circumstances that make it more of a challenge, I believe, today. And then let's say 30, 40 years ago, with respect to outmaneuvering some of the intentional problems that have been created for mankind. And so in this regard, I certainly applaud people's efforts to become more self-empowered and self-sufficient in all ways. And even in creating excellent health and in dealing with personal issues as much as humanly possible in a self-sufficient manner and a totally self-empowering manner. And I'd now like to share with you one of my, an answer from a question from Muji. And first I'll start actually with a kind of a quote from Muji, and he says that when you are without need, you find peace. I think that's a good one to ponder. And he was asked, from your experience, what is the common cause of suffering? And Muji replies, ignorance of our true nature as pure consciousness is responsible for all human misery. We have no idea that there is a dimension to ourselves that is not locked inside the bubble of personal experiencing. As a person, our attention is mostly engaged with the play of transience that makes up the context of our waking state. Little attention, therefore, goes to consciousness, our essential being, which is a kind of space within which the movement of what we call life is played out and observed. Every sentient being is naturally conscious of its existence. Everyone knows and refers to themselves as I am. When we say I am, it points to consciousness, to sentience. I am is the untaught way of self-knowledge. However, consciousness, due to the conditioning it has received, started identifying with the instrument through which it can taste its existence. Hence the idea, I am only the body and personality, was born. It is a severe limitation upon one's being and the chief cause of suffering in this world. But each one has the potential inside themselves to discover their inherent freedom and escape this delusion. On a deeper level, this is really what motivates our existence. Unaware of the tremendous harmony that exists in the universe, the human race is restless. This restlessness is actually a search for lasting satisfaction. As persons, we are compelled for a while to search for fulfillment in the fleeting objects of this world, which are time-bound. But that essential itch is only alleviated once and for all when our personal identity is merged with our timeless being. And that's from Muji. Now, speaking of Muji, I am at this time in touch with the people that help arrange for him to appear on certain shows. And I'm hoping that we will be successful in having Muji as a guest on ET Yoga. And I'm hoping that will come about very soon. Another question asked of Muji, who are you without your problems? And I guess somebody asked Muji that they said that they're unable to concentrate on the inquiry. And I assume the inquiry being the Who Am I technique, because he does promote that quite a bit as a student of Papaji, who was a student of Ramana Maharshi. And this person says that I lose focus easily. Muji says, yes, you'd rather walk to the moon than inquire into yourself. And the guy says, my problem is, and Muji kind of interrupts and says, your problem is not the problem. We love our problems and cannot bear to be without them. They are our illegitimate children, demanding so much attention, and we readily give it to them. Perhaps we feel bored without them. Who are you without your problems? Mind makes all this fuss. You are neither the mind nor its activities. But how do I stop the mind? Well, don't stop the mind. Just leave it be. Ignore it and remain as self. But it won't allow me. Well, listen to this. A man has been taking driving lessons and can now tackle the main road. One morning, he is driving on the highway alongside his instructor, and it begins to rain. The instructor advises the man to switch on the windscreen wipers. But as soon as the wipers start moving, the driver's attention begins to follow them, and the car is now swerving from side to side along the road. Other drivers begin tooting their horns, thinking the driver is drunk. Can we turn the wipers off? They are distracting me, asks the learner. Keep your eyes on the road alone, and the wipers will not distract you, the instructor advises. I think I at least need to go to the slow lane, requests the driver. No, says the instructor firmly. Only focus on the road. I can't, says the man frustrated. My eyes go voluntarily with their movement. Could we switch them off? No, you must learn to drive with them on, the instructor points out. Focus only on the road. But it's too dangerous. I can't keep the car straight, says the man. No, stay focused on the road only. Ignore the wipers. But it's too dangerous. I'll crash, the man exclaims. Other drivers are now shouting and swearing at the man. Get off the road, you drunk. The rain is now torrential, and the instructor pushes the wipers up to full speed. Simply focus on the road alone and relax. The driver, although very anxious, trusts the instructor's calm voice. Gradually, the car straightens up as the driver is somehow able to hold his attention on the road despite the wipers swishing at full speed. The driver relaxes. Now there is no distraction caused by the moving wipers. It is the same with you. Focus on the road means to stay focused as the neutral observer rather than focusing on your thoughts or surrounding conditions or apparent problems. Remain as the observer. Don't follow the mind flow. You are not this mind flow. Keep the attention inside the awareness. The driver did not learn to focus adopting a technique by chanting mantras or by practicing yoga or meditation. He simply trusted his teacher's advice, applied it, and focus simply happened. Initially, trust, effort, and grace are all required for the attention to remain merged in the self. Now you carry on by doing the same. And that's from Muji. And I think an interesting point there that he makes is one that Sri Swami Satchidananda used to make too. And that is at some point in your yoga practice, you even discard the techniques. Satchidananda would say that the techniques are kind of like when your hands are dirty and you use soap. You use soap to remove the dirt from your hand. And it's sort of like the techniques, like meditation, sometimes can remove the dirt from the lens of the mind so that you can have a pure reflection of the self. But at some point in time, once your hands are clean, you don't keep using the soap indefinitely. So even techniques kind of fall by the wayside. And interesting point of view. And also a very knowledgeable one. And another one of Satchidananda's sayings would be that there are no prerequisites to enlightenment. In other words, there's no set formula that everybody has to follow. It's like, you know, one person may do, you know, more meditation than another person, or another person may be more involved with karma yoga, or they're do yoga while you're in your service or in your job. And another one may be doing chanting. Or kirtan is what they call that in Indian terminology. Somebody else may be more of an expert in what they call jnana yoga, the yoga of knowledge. But there's no set path. Everybody's got their own unique path. And in terms of, like Bashar would say, techniques in many senses are kind of like permission slips. The ones that you choose are probably, for you, the most powerful. Not that they're inherently powerful. Bashar kind of sees all the techniques as permission slips to be successful. And I'd now like to share an excerpt from Muji's guru, or Papaji, or Sri Punja. And this excerpt is actually from an interview and the interviewer was named David Godman. And I find it has a lot of interesting concepts related to what I've been speaking about. This interview was conducted with Papaji in the Botanic Gardens in 1993 in Lucknow. And it was included as the final chapter of Papaji interviews. It was called Suma Iru, which means keep quiet. So I think it's always fascinating to hear the answers from certain questions from high beings. And so David Godman says, Papaji, we're trying to make a film about your teachings, but how can we make a film when you say you have no teachings? And Papaji says, to have any teaching is preaching. A real teacher has no teaching, no method, no way. To know your own self, you don't need any teaching. What you really are, always you are, that itself. No one is going to teach you. You have to realize who you are here and now in this moment. And David says, do you regard telling people in which direction they should look as teaching? And Papaji says, people should not look in any direction. Looking in a particular direction means abiding in an object, the object you are directing your attention towards. People get lost this way. But if they do away with all directions, if they have no concept of any direction in their mind, then they will know what they really are. They will know that they are that itself, that which they always are and that which they always will be. And then he says, do you regard yourself as a guru, Papaji? And Papaji says, no, not at all. I never declare I am a guru. And David says, well, what about all these people who think they are your devotees and disciples? Are they your devotees? And Papaji says, when there is no guru, there is no question of any devotees. When they come to see me, I welcome them. Whoever comes, I welcome them. If they don't come, I still wish them good luck. And when they leave me, I say, farewell, be happy wherever you are. David says, you are encouraging everyone who comes to you to look for their own self. Why are you doing this? What motivates you to do this? Papaji says, my own happiness. These people are sleeping. They are all suffering when the treasure is within them. Everybody, all the human beings of this world are suffering because they are trying to find peace and happiness in objects. They are examining and experiencing objects one by one, but this is only resulting in pain and suffering. There is no object in the mind, no person, no thing, no concept that can return you to happiness and peace of mind. So I just tell them, I just give them this information. Don't look here, there, anywhere. Peace is within you and within the heart of all beings. So keep quiet. Don't look anywhere. Don't allow your mind to abide anywhere, and you'll see that it is peace, happiness itself. That is the fundamental truth. Every being in the world is happiness itself. And David says, I think that most people who come to you think that you are giving out something more than just information. I think they feel that in your presence there is some power, some grace, which enables them to discover what you are pointing at. Do you have any comment on this? Papaji, definitely. I am pointing at their own self, which is the fountain of grace, of beauty. In that place, love and peace also arise. I just point this out by saying, look within yourself for 1 second. You don't need to search. You don't need to find. Just look within yourself, and you will see that you are peace itself. I just point this out. People are asleep. It's better to wake them up because they are dreaming. These dreams are only mental projections, because people take them to be real, they cause a lot of suffering. If you see a tiger in your dream, you get afraid. If you get attacked by a dream robber, you get afraid. Stop all the mental projections. See that the dream is only a dream. See that it is not real. Whatever you see, it's just a dream. Wherever there is an object, wherever there is a seer and the seen, there is a dream. If there are objects and a subject who sees them, there is a dream. But if you somehow get rid of subjects and objects and of the relationship between them, what's left? David says, when you look at people who come to you and tell you, Papaji, I suffer, do you feel compassion for them? And when they wake up, do you rejoice? Papaji, I do feel compassion. What else is there for me? I have compassion for all beings who are suffering and who are dreaming. I just tell them, wake up, my dear friends, my dear children, wake up. There's no suffering at all. It's only a projection of your mind. It's not real. You're dreaming. Wake up from the dream and all the suffering will end. David, I would like you to tell the story of the Japanese professor with one lung who couldn't stop laughing. I think that it's a very good story about your teaching. Can you tell the whole story? Papaji, when he arrived, I was upstairs in my house giving satsang to some people there. He asked the people downstairs if I would come down and see him because he had been told by his doctor that he should not climb stairs. He was told, Papaji is very busy right now. He is giving satsang upstairs. If you cannot wait, you must go up and see him. The man had a great desire to see me, so he decided to climb the stairs rather than wait for me to finish. The people downstairs helped him, but even so, he climbed very slowly and with great difficulty. When he arrived, everyone in the room, including me, was laughing. For the whole time he was there, there was no verbal teachings given out. There was just continuous laughter. He also joined in, even though he didn't know why we were laughing. Then, as it was lunchtime, we all went downstairs to eat. During lunch, he remarked, I only have one lung. The other has been surgically removed. My doctor has told me not to climb stairs and not to laugh because these activities put too much strain on the lung. If I laugh or climb stairs, I'm supposed to take some medicine to help my lung recover from the exertion. But here I don't feel any need to take the medicine. In fact, I feel as if my other lung has been replaced. And then he started laughing again. During all the time he was with me, he never asked any questions. He only laughed and laughed and laughed. It put no strain on him, and he never needed to take his medicine. Later, after he had returned to Japan, he sent one of his students to see me. This student told me that after his professor had arrived back in Japan, he was asked, what have you brought from Lucknow? What is the teaching of Punjaji? His only response was to start laughing. He laughed and laughed and laughed, and when the laughter finally subsided, he was asked again, what is the teaching of Punjaji? And he replied, laughing, laughing, and dancing. When a person laughs, he has no mind, no thought, no problem, no suffering. David, so long as the laughter persists, there is no mind? Papaji, no mind. You try. Those who don't laugh, they have got minds. They look very serious and have many problems. They have minds because for any problem, for any suffering, you need to have a mind. It's the mind that suffers, you see. So laugh away your problems. If any problem comes, laugh it away. If you laugh, it will go away. It will run away. It will fly away. David, so laughter is a response to the absence of pain and suffering? Would you say that? What do you say? When all the mental problems go, then spontaneously laughter arises. Papaji, of course, yes, yes, only the man who has got rid of all his problems, he alone laughs, he alone dances. As a solution to all his problems, he only has to dance, he only has to laugh. There was once a saint who lived on the top of a mountain. At midnight, on a full moon night, he started laughing and laughing, and all the people of the village woke up wondering, what has happened to the monk? They went to the top of the hill and asked him, sir, what happened? The saint answered, laughing, look, 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 there's a cloud, there's a cloud. Many people see clouds, but who laughs at them? Only the one who has no mind. Anything he sees will give him occasion to laugh, because as he looks at it, he becomes that thing itself. The cloud is there. The moon is behind it. If you have no mind, this sight alone can make you laugh. David, so when you see the world, Papaji, you mostly laugh at it? You think it's all a big joke? Papaji, laughing. I only joke. What else is there to do? I don't study any sutras. I never studied any sutras, nor do I refer to any sutras. I only make jokes. And he laughs again. David, Papaji, we're making this film for a foreign television audience. And which probably does not know much about either you or your teachings. Will you please tell them exactly what enlightenment is in terms they can understand? Papaji, enlightenment is for those people who have not found any satisfaction in sensory indulgence. It is for those people who are fed up with things, with objects, and the enjoyment of them. The desire for freedom, for enlightenment, arises when one begins to understand that permanent happiness cannot be found in sensory pleasures. The objects which the five senses record cannot give you permanent happiness. If you have a desire for something, some object, which the senses are recording, happiness will briefly arise at the moment when your desire is fulfilled. But it is not the object itself which gives you the happiness. It is the fulfillment of the desire for it. When the desire is there, while there is still a wanting to achieve or get something, there is no happiness. The desire drops only at the moment when it is fulfilled. At that moment, there are no thoughts, no desires. If you look closely at your own experience, you will discover that happiness arises spontaneously only when there are no thoughts and no desires. And then it disappears when thoughts and desires come back. What can one deduce from this? The simple conclusion is that when you are empty of thoughts and desires, happiness arises. And when thoughts and desires are there, happiness is no longer experienced. Happiness, therefore, lies in the emptiness of no thought, not in the quest for more and more things. Objects and the desire for them are transitory. They come and they go. Whatever comes and goes is not permanent. If you want permanent happiness, you must understand that you can never get it through the pursuit of things that come and go. The emptiness of no thought, of no desires, is permanent. It is the source of true permanent happiness. In fact, it is happiness itself. When you understand and fully accept this, the mind no longer reaches out for external gratification because it understands that the very act of reaching out causes desire and suffering to arise. When you can abide in that emptiness, that permanent happiness, without feeling a need to search for happiness anywhere else, you are free from desires and suffering. That freedom is enlightenment. Once you have established yourself in that state, you no longer need to worry about or pursue anything in this world. The people and things of this world will still be there, but they will not cause you any trouble or suffering because the desire to get pleasure and happiness through them will never arise. The emptiness, the happiness, will never be diminished even if you lead an active worldly life, because the thoughts and desires which formerly resulted in misery, suffering, and frustration will simply not arise. When you have a desire for freedom, when you begin to understand that permanent happiness cannot be gained through the pursuit of worldly pleasures, you should look for a perfect being. Someone who has permanently established himself in the state of true and permanent happiness. Such a being, whose heart is perfection itself, can make you aware of the happiness and the emptiness that lie within you. He may do it by the power of his thought, by looking at you, by touching you, or simply by being quiet. Anyone who comes into contact with such a being will be benefited by his presence. Such a perfect being has no sense of self, no sense of being an individual person. Though everyone who comes to him is benefited by being in his presence, that perfect being never thinks that he is helping anyone because he knows that there is no one who is separate or apart from him. You all make the same mistake of believing that you are separate people with separate minds and bodies. This idea is just a thought. In the presence of a fully enlightened being, this thought can disappear, leaving behind it an awareness of who you really are. the emptiness of no self, of pure happiness that you experience in the presence of an enlightened being, is the direct knowledge of reality itself. I never advise anyone to renounce the world. This is not the way to get enlightenment. It has been tried both in the West and the East for thousands of years, but it has not given any good results. My advice is different. I simply say, keep quiet. Stay wherever you are. Don't reject your worldly activities. Simply keep quiet for a single second and see what happens. This is a very new idea. I don't think that it has been given out by anyone before. Formerly, people used to do tapas for years and years in remote places in an attempt to win enlightenment. Even kings would give up their kingdoms, go to the forest, and devote all their energies to gaining enlightenment. But it didn't work. Why? Because freedom, enlightenment, is not something that can be won or gained. It is already here and now, within you, as your own self. You don't have to go looking for it anywhere else. It is concealed by the wrong ideas you have about yourself. You think, this is my body, this is my mind. These ideas are the hindrances which stop you being aware of your real nature. If you can remove them, you are free. You can give up these ideas anywhere. You don't need to go to a forest to discard them. David, people in the West are always being given advice from spiritual teachers. Everybody is telling them, join our group and you'll be happy. Follow our advice and you'll be happy. What is different about your message and why should people believe it? And interesting that Papaji would say they advise the people in order to destroy them. I tell them to reject those teachers and preachers and come to me. I'll give you good advice. Don't listen to anybody's advice, not even mine. Peep within yourself and listen to your own voice. What do you hear? Don't listen to any advice because all advice belongs to the past. If someone gives you some advice, that advice has come from something the advisor has heard, read, or experienced. So all this advice comes from the past. You don't need any advice to know your own self. Don't listen to anybody's advice. Just keep quiet. This is the best advice. I tell people, keep quiet. Don't think and don't make any effort just for a single second. This is my advice. And if you follow it, you've done very well, not only for yourself, but for everybody, for all the beings of the world. David, so following any advice, except the advice be quiet, takes one away from the self, not towards it? Papaji, of course, it has to because it takes you to the past. I repeat, any advice that you can mention has come from someone who has heard it or read it. It is all from the past. It cannot show you what you are right now, this moment. Don't believe any of the messages that come to you. Don't even believe the information that your senses are sending to you. Ignore all advice. Transcend the senses and all the information they're giving you. Then and only then will you know what you are. You have tasted sensual pleasures for millions of years. Now, for the first time, you are wearing a human form. Make the best of it. Don't listen to any advice. Advisors have not shown good results. Advisors only teach you to fight, to quarrel with your neighbors and all the other people who don't belong to your church. And if you follow their advice, some other teachers will then tell you, no, don't follow their advice. Follow my advice. Once this happens, quarrels are inevitable. David, you say, Papaji, that a strong desire for freedom is required. Are any other qualifications needed? Papaji, I don't think that this can be called a qualification. It arises spontaneously from within. In a few rare ones, it arises from within and dances on the bosom. When a desire arises for a sense object, you're happy to go out and meet that object. But freedom is neither an object nor a subject. The desire for freedom rises from the source, plays on the source, and settles down in the same source. When it is there, it plays with itself, enjoys for some time, and then settles down. The rising and falling is never a problem because it is always the same whether it rises or not. When people say the desire for freedom rises and subsides, what they are saying is that for the rest of the time, other desires rise and fall. Also, when you say the desire for freedom has arisen in me, you are implying that there was a time when the desire was not there. I myself never felt the desire for freedom rise because it was always there. Right from childhood, it was there. David, do we need to have faith in anything, Papaji? Do we need to believe in the teacher's words? Do we need to believe we can get freedom? Do we have to have faith in something? Papaji, yes, of course you need faith. Faith in your own self. Faith that I am free. If you want to have faith in something, this is the best faith you can have. I'm already free. You are now believing. I am suffering. I am bound. Why not instead change it to the best faith that I am free? What difference does it make? David, if one has the absolute conviction I am free, then the conviction becomes experience. Is that what you're saying? Papaji, no, not experience. Freedom is not an experience. Experiences are always with something else. The desire for freedom will finally vanish, leaving freedom itself. When freedom knows itself, it alone will remain. Right now, you're busy with other desires. When they have all left you, it, freedom, will remain and reveal itself to you. And Papaji, David says, Papaji, you say the enlightenment is a very easy thing to discover, and yet I have heard you say many times that the number of people who have fully woken up to their own self can be measured on one's fingers. If it is so easy, why do so few succeed? And Papaji says, it's so easy because you don't have to work for it. It's so easy because you don't have to go anywhere to get it. All you have to do is keep quiet. Attaining freedom is therefore a very easy thing. People say that it is difficult only because their minds are always engaged with something else. Freedom itself is not difficult. It is giving up the attachment to other things that is difficult. Disengaging yourself from attachments may be difficult. You have to make a decision to do it. You can decide now or put it off to your next life. And that's from Papaji, or Sri Punja, guru of Muji. And I guess it's about that time in the ET Yoga program when I wish my listening audience my sincere best towards your attainment of full consciousness, self-realization, perfect health, and abundance. And now I'd like to close the program in the usual manner, by sharing with you the Who Am I technique. And I suppose this particular technique is taught in many different ways, and I don't think there's really a right or wrong way. I guess the way that it works is the right way. And because it worked for me, kind of let me go through a doorway. I know that it's possible for other people to have the same experience. And I like to suggest that people get into the highest place that they know how to get to. They can use their asanas and pranayams or meditation or whatever internal method they'd like to use to get to that high place, and then put their entire focus or concentration in their ajna center or third eye. And what you want to do is become that spot. And with your total focus on that spot, you then ask the self-inquiry, which is, who am I? And you might ask it in a variety of manners, slow or fast, multiple times, or a few times. And I guess at the highest level, when you're asking questions, the answer will come. Question is, can you hear it? And in this case, it's not that there's going to be an answer, it's going to be an experience. So the idea here is to put your full attention in your third eye center and become that spot. And then you state the following: I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot. What spot?
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all things.